Radio Prague News.
The Czech Minorities and Human Rights Minister is planning to raise the issue of human rights in China at a planned EU-China summit to be held in Prague. The opposition Social Democrats want Parliament to vote on the Lisbon Treaty without further delay, and patients in region-owned hospitals no longer have to pay healthcare fees. The Czech Minister for Minorities and Human Rights, Michal Kocáb, is planning to raise the issue of human rights in China at an EU-China summit to be held in Prague during the Czech presidency of the European Union. Mr. Kocáb said that while Czech politicians had consistently criticized China for its poor human rights record in the past, the Czech Republic would now be speaking on behalf of the whole European Union. Michal Kocáb, who took office last month within a broader cabinet reshuffle, also pointed out that enhanced trade between the EU and China might help alleviate the effects of the current financial crisis. The opposition Social Democrats want to vote on the Lisbon Treaty when the lower house of parliament convenes for its next session on Tuesday. The lower house debated the reform document in December, but the session was adjourned until the 3rd of February. The Social Democrats are also considering pushing for a referendum on the treaty. The party's leader Jiří Paroubek hopes that such a move would find favor with some rebel members of the governing Civic Democrats, who would help him bring down the government in a vote of no confidence. The referendum would take place simultaneously with early elections later this year. Mr. Paroubek said he was confident Czechs would approve the Lisbon Treaty if they were given a chance to vote on it. Meanwhile, Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek said on Monday that he would like Parliament to ratify the treaty by the end of February. The Czech Republic, which currently holds the 6-month rotating presidency of the European Union, is the only member of the 27-member bloc not to have voted on the EU's reformed treaty. Patients in region-owned hospitals and other healthcare facilities no longer have to pay health fees. As of Monday, the regional governments, formed by the opposition Social Democrats following their landslide victory in October's regional elections, will cover the cost of the fees for patients. The health fees for visits to the doctor, emergency treatment and drug prescriptions were introduced by the center-right government of Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek at the beginning of last year within a broader healthcare reform plan. They have caused tremendous controversy. The opposition managed to cancel the fees in Parliament's lower house in December. The Senate has now come up with an amendment to the law which respects some of the objections to the fees from within the ruling coalition. The Czech government has agreed that it will buy a leaking dangerous waste dump in Moravia for 23 million crowns, or just over $1 million, in order to have it fixed, the Czech news agency ČTK reported on Monday. The dump site, established in the community of Pozďátky in Western Moravia in 1994, contains thousands of tons of chemicals which began leaking into a nearby stream. The government has been trying to buy the site for more than 6 years. The Environment Ministry said immediate emergency measures would cost another 17 million crowns. And now a quick look at the weather. The start of the week will see cloudy skies with rain and snow in places. Highest day temperatures should range between 0 and plus 4 degrees Celsius. My name is Jan Richter and that's the end of the news.
Hello, you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Rob Cameron. Coming up in today's program, we ask the head of the Senate's Foreign Affairs Committee, Jiří Dienstbier, why he believes Barack Obama will shelve plans to build part of the missile defense shield on Czech soil. A court in South Moravia orders Třebíč Hospital to pay more than 3 million crowns in compensation over the mixed-up babies case. And, as usual, we'll have a roundup of all the latest sports news. Later in the program, we speak to an American genealogist who helps people track down their long-lost Czech relatives. That's all in today's program. Stay tuned. Two weeks into the new Obama administration, some have expressed doubts over the future of US missile defense in Central Europe. Last year, the Czech Republic signed two treaties with the United States on stationing a radar base on Czech soil, part of a broader missile defense shield. But on Sunday, the head of the Czech Senate's Foreign Affairs Committee, Jiří Dienstbier, expressed doubts it would ever be built. Speaking to Czech television, Mr. Dienspier said he believed the US had other priorities and that the only way the radar would ever be deployed in the Czech Republic would be with NATO and Russian involvement. Earlier, my colleague Jan Wellinger spoke to Jiří Dienspier on the phone from Kladno.
There are too many reasons why I am convinced that this system will be put somewhere in the shelves and that it will be lost there forever. Vice President Biden has always been against these derivatives of the Star Wars. President Obama and Vice President Biden say that they have to evaluate this decision just to find out whether it functions, as it doesn't. For the Americans, it's peanuts de facto. Now they have totally different problems, like the world economic crisis and Afghanistan and Iraq.
Are there conditions under which the system could continue? I'm thinking of involvement by, say, NATO and Russia.
Well, the basic problem is that we have to debate between Europe and the United States and also with other players on the world scene what are the present dangers and by what means we can challenge them. If there is a general agreement between all these players that the anti-missile system is needed, then we can discuss it, but you can see that it was just the program of Bush administration. They tried to implant it into NATO and Europe via so-called New Europe, as Rumsfeld called it. That means via Czech Republic and Poland. And nobody wants it by now.
And now you say that nobody wants it now, but it seems that the Czech government as well as the Polish government are still in favor. Yesterday, that was something that was noted by the former national security advisor to Jimmy Carter, Zbigniew Brzeziński. Do you think that it's the case where the Czechs and the Polish governments actually want it more now than the U.S. itself?
Well, I think that Brzeziński is absolutely right, because the present Czech political representatives and the Polish representatives invested too much political capital to convince the population that it is needed. They haven't succeeded even now, because in Czech Republic almost 70% people are totally against such a system. It is difficult for them to step down from this project.
Former Foreign Minister Jiří Dienspier speaking there to Jan Wellinger, and we'll obviously bring you more developments on that story as they happen. A Brno court has ordered Třebíč Hospital in Moravia to pay a total of 3.3 million Czech crowns in damages, that's about $150,000, to the families of two baby girls who were accidentally switched at birth, a fact that only came to light 10 months later. The court ruling was unprecedented and has evoked heated debate in the media regarding how you can put a price tag on this kind of trauma. Well, Daniela Lazarová has been following the story and joins me now in the studio. Daniela, the story caused a sensation at the time and made international headlines. Can you remind us again of just what happened?
Indeed, it did cause a sensation, Rob, and I think it was partly due to how the switch was actually uncovered. One of the fathers asked for a DNA test without his partner's knowledge, and he was told that his daughter was not actually his biological child. Well, he confronted his partner, who denied it, and a second DNA test revealed that she was not the biological mother either. And that, of course, set the ball rolling. They contacted the hospital, and eventually their daughter was traced living with a family who also had a baby girl on that same day and who they themselves were looking after. Now, needless to say, it turned both couples' lives upside down. They swapped the children, which was unbearably painful, and I think it would be fair to say that they have not fully recovered to this day.
Indeed, who could blame them? But obviously they have been offered compensation.
Well, that's interesting, because first the hospital tried to hush up the whole affair. Then they offered those families a ridiculously small amount, 300,000 crowns each. That's $13,000. So, of course, they took the matter to court and they got 3.3 million altogether. That's $150,000. Though, not surprisingly, not everyone got the same amount of money.
Right, but how is that possible? And indeed, what was that verdict and that payout based on? Can you actually measure the extent to which they suffered and say who suffered more and who suffered less?
Well, yes, that's still at the centre of the controversy surrounding this case. Some people, of course, argue that this is simply not possible, that you can't do it, it's not even ethical to try. But the court did order a lot of psychological tests with the parents, which naturally exposed them to further torment and brought out a lot of dirty linen, which I'm sure they would have preferred to keep to themselves. In any case, they were subjected to these psychological tests, and it was on the grounds of these tests that the court finally came to a verdict. The man who started the whole affair by secretly ordering a DNA test got the smallest compensation package on the grounds that he reportedly knew what he was getting into. His partner, who has often said that she'd be better off not knowing and who's had real problems bonding with her biological daughter, is to receive $700,000, while the other couple, whose marriage is now said to be breaking up, received several hundred thousand crowns more each. Now, funnily enough, even the children did not get the same amount. One got $300,000, the other got $150,000, and apparently that was all depending on how stable and loving an environment they had both before and after the swap.
It's amazing. And how are the girls and the parents doing now? Indeed, are other people in this country, people who may have harboured secret doubts, are they also now asking for DNA tests?
Well, as for the girls, from what we know, the girls appear to have settled down fairly well. They've now spent a year in a new environment. But psychologists say that one cannot rule out later traumas. The two sets of parents are much worse off. They both admit to having serious problems and say they're just sticking together for the sake of the children. One of the fathers apparently has been driven to drink by all this, all of which, of course, may create more problems for the children in the future. So things are not looking bright for those two families. As for other people asking for tests, the answer is yes, Rob. There was a wave of DNA testing shortly after the news story broke. But I think that's receded now, and I think that the very public suffering of these two families has indicated just how painful such a discovery can be and how difficult it is to then make decisions relating to the future. So I think that some people may be thinking twice before asking for a DNA test.
Indeed. Well, it's certainly a moral minefield and a fascinating story. Daniela Lazaraba, thank you very much. Now time for a change of gear. Ian Willoughby joins us for all the latest sports news and results.
First up today, it's speed skating and a great weekend for the Czech Republic's Martina Sablíková. On Saturday, she came first in the 3,000 metres in a World Cup event in Germany's Erfurt, with her best time of the season and a new course record, cementing her overall lead in the competition. That success was followed by a gold medal in the Team Pursuit World Cup for a Czech team made up of Sablíková, Andrea Jirku and Karolina Erbanova. It was the first time the Czech women's team had ever won that event, which came to a climax on Sunday. Here's the team's coach, Petr Novák.
It's a surprise. Let's not call it a sensation, because let me say right now that this Czech team has a chance of winning a medal at the Olympic Games. They've set a Czech record, and today they won the World Cup. They won it overall, and nobody can take that away from us. I'm very happy.
Zdeněk Štybar came second at this year's Cyclocross World Championships in Holland's Hoogerheide on Sunday. The Czech, who is 23, also took silver in the competition last year and was rather philosophical about his result this time out.
There is a huge difference between coming second and becoming world champion. On one hand, I'm disappointed about it. On the other, I'm really happy for my fans and for my team who look after me.
There was bad news for Czech ice hockey fans at the weekend when Jaromír Jágr announced he'd have to pull out of the Czech squad for the Swedish Games due to illness. The first game is being held here in Prague on Thursday before the competition moves on to Stockholm, and tickets for the O2 Arena sold out quickly when it was announced that Jágr was going to play in his first international tournament since 2006. The organisers say they won't give disappointed fans their money back, with one official comparing the star's pullout to an act of God. With less than 3 weeks before the Czech football season resumes after the winter break, league leaders Slavia Prague have lost another of their best players. After striker Tomáš Nedzid left for CSKA Moscow and fullback Matej Krajcik joined Italy's Regina, Slavia sold holding midfielder Michail Tavares to Hamburg at the weekend. The club said they couldn't stand in the way of such an opportunity for the Frenchman. Meanwhile, Czech international Radoslav Kovač has joined West Ham on a 6-month loan deal from Spartak Moscow. Kovač, who is 29 and can play either in central defence or midfield, won't be lost for Czech conversation at the Premier League club. Jan Laštůvka and Milan Štěch are reserve goalkeepers at West Ham, where the goalkeeping coach is former international Luděk Mikloško. Indeed, Mikloško's teacher wife is going to be giving Radoslav Kovač English lessons. That's all the sport for today.
And you're listening to Radio Prague, where it's time for another edition of our weekly interview programme, One on One. Rosie Johnston speaks to genealogist Tom Zahn about reuniting people with their long-lost Czech relatives.
My guest for today's one-on-one is Tom Zahn, an American who's been living in Prague for most of the last 15 years, and who has, during his time in the capital, been specialising in a somewhat unusual trade. Tom runs a firm called Pathfinders, which tracks down clients' long-lost Czech and Slovak relatives, and in many cases reintroduces both parties. When I met Tom in his office overlooking Prague's Vyšehrad fortress, he told me when his interest in Prague and genealogy was born.
Originally, I decided to come to Prague after hearing Václav Havel speak in the United States to our Congress. But it was not just his speech, it was what happened before his speech, and that was apparently he had only had some notes that he had scribbled or he had written out in his own hand, and he hadn't followed the protocol in Washington, which was to deliver a copy of the speech to the different press secretaries for the different senators and congressmen. So on the West Coast, this was already big news on NPR radio. I paid attention to the speech then, and I thought, wow, this is not normal. A person saying, if you want to help us, help Russia. In fact, I found that speech to be quite brilliant. So I decided in 1990 that I would like to come here without knowing anything further about the country. It was only 2 years later when I finally had saved up enough money and I was preparing to come that my employer at the time asked if I'd ever done any genealogy. I went to Salt Lake City with my employer almost a month before coming here, and we found solid evidence where the family was from in East Slovakia and Western Ukraine. And so I came here with something in my hand of interest. And also my father, after I'd been to the archives, he gave me some outlines of his family and the fact that the spelling may have changed. Instead of Z-A-H-N, it was C-Z-A-N. It was, for me, a very poignant thing, though, because while I was here on my first visit, my father passed away. And that gave my purpose in doing the genealogy that much more meaning to me.
What gave you the idea to then start doing this for other people?
Well, I'd stayed only for a few months at that point. I'd gone back to the United States with this. It was successful. I went back to work, but during the period I was back in the United States, I was corresponding with somebody here, a young girl. So I came back again that summer. Some people had seen the work that I had done for my family, because whenever I spoke with anybody about it, I showed them this genealogy that went back to sometime in the 1700s, 1713, 1718. And they said, wow, can you do that for us? Because at the time, these records were not available through any other source. You had to literally come here or find somebody here. So it kind of became a little bit of a niche for us. I came back with the idea that we would start doing this research for people. And the first one, I can remember, I had to go back to Slovakia, and I was hitchhiking. I took a wild bus ride from Levoča into the mountains, and I thought, I'm going into a different country. I didn't, you know, really know what I was getting myself into. But when I got to the office there, the woman in this Tiki Potok spoke perfect English, and it was really a surprise because it was a successful job and the family was happy. So one thing led to another. After a few successes, I guess word started to get out, and from that point on, we really officially began to do this work.
Have you noticed that it's taken off in the last couple of years, ancestral tourism? Would you say that it is something that's getting more and more popular? I mean, obviously your reputation is getting bigger and bigger, but would you say that just objectively this is something that people are more and more interested in?
I don't know if I would say that. I think, in fact, that it was at its height in the late 90s. There was a huge interest in it because it was pent up. There were so many people who wanted to do it, this particular generation of people who were retired, who maybe at a younger age had wanted to come here. Some of them even had been here, but under the former regime, it was difficult for them to get anywhere. Now, at the late 90s to where we are now, the internet has really blossomed or exploded, literally, to the point where so much is available online. So I think that's had a big impact on the numbers we see of people interested.
Do you believe that maybe Americans coming to Europe to find their relatives have a very different attitude towards their relatives in the old country than, say, us Europeans have towards our relatives in America? Would you say that there's that sort of, not exactly inequality, but a very different attitude?
Frankly, no. For example, in the United States, genealogy is somewhat of a hobby. I refer to it occasionally as being a soft science, something that is not so strict. On this side of the pond, genealogy was studied, with the, you know, functional word here being was, as a science. It was a part of the philosophical faculty at Charles University for many years. There was a college of genealogy. Now that no longer exists, but there are some very fantastic resources from the 1920s and 30s that had been written concerning genealogies, many of them in German. But the idea that genealogy is something that's based on hard fact, and people are very strict about it, has to do with the use of genealogy in the past to prove some kind of claim towards either nobility or property, real property. In the United States, that's not so much the purpose. It's just to find your connectivity to the past.
A part of the job that you do is once you've done all this groundwork, introducing, say, a second, third generation immigrant to their family that remains here. Can you tell me a bit about one particular experience, say, that was particularly rewarding? I don't know, I'm sure you've had a few.
There is, on the part of many Americans, a presupposed notion that there might be some blue blood, there might be some connection to an event that they might have heard about when they were children. And in this respect, we did have one person who told us that they were certain that they were from the nobility. Well, we took them to the village. We'd done the hard work of the record search and found exactly where they were from in the house. And when we took them there, they were sort of put off by it and said, no, there must be a mistake. This can't possibly be it. My uncles told us that we were from the nobility. And that was the first time we had heard that, and so we were kind of put off, but we said, well, in fact, the person inside the house is expecting your visit. They've welcomed you. Do you want to go ahead with it? And the woman from the United States graciously accepted, I think more out of being polite. When she was inside, the woman, she had a box filled with pictures and like old postcards. She's going through this box, and she pulls one out, and the woman from the United States, her expression changed immediately. She reached into her purse and pulled out the same picture. So these are this kind of moment is precious because you know absolutely that there is a connection. That well, now, this woman from the United States then had this quandary. How was it that her uncles had lied? And so we had to further flush the story out that the uncles would sit around playing cards and talking about this when she was just a little girl. We were able to go to the next village over, and one of the more important resources that we use here are these village histories. In this case, we found a chronicle in the next village where the brothers or the uncles had lived. These two brothers had lived in a house and worked in a house that was a pub, a hospoda, and the name of the house was U Schlechta, or At the Nobility.
Tom Zahn speaking to Rosie Johnson for this week's edition of One on One. And if you joined us halfway through that, don't forget you can hear it again on our website, www.radio.cz. But for now, from myself, Rob Cameron, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.